All right, hey, welcome everybody. My name is J.R. Bennett.
I'm Ryan Wachowski.
Hey, Ryan Wachowski. Hey, welcome to the Unsolicited Advice Podcast Show.
Absolutely.
How are you today?
Are you asking me or
yeah,
the
audience? Yeah, you.
I'm doing okay.
All right, and everybody at home, how are you?
All right.
Good to hear it. Good. Okay.
Excellent.
I don't usually talk to the audience, break the fourth wall like that. Thanks, everybody, for listening again. We're back. This is the second week in a row, So we're back on track, I feel like. And we've prepared at least one interesting topic to talk about, which is everybody's talking about it.
Absolutely.
It's being talked about a lot, and we're actually going to be talking about them talking about it.
That's going to be the point. It's like a meta conversation on what's actually happening with these With the shootings, there's been three children, black children, killed, I believe, by police forces across the country.
White police officers. Those are just the ones that have been blown up recently.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been a problem for a long time. That's why so many people are upset about it.
Before we get so that's what we're going to talk about today. But before we get started, we're going to have a little giveaway this week. So we have a few t-shirts that we want to give away, fresh off the presses.
These are the first t-shirts, in fact.
This is the first set of Unsolicited Advice gear we have. So we are going to give a few of those away. All you have to do, it's going to be the first three people, the first three new listeners that we don't already know about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
So I don't count,
and I'm not going to get a t-shirt, and okay. You're not going to get a t-shirt. But we are going to, all you have to do is go onto our Facebook page, like us, and then share this podcast once it's posted on there. Does that sound good?
It sounds good, okay. Yeah. And you get a t-shirt.
And you'll get a free t-shirt. Yeah. So just do
tell that. Us about the t-shirt. What color is the t-shirt?
Absolutely. We'll message you. Oh, me?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's a great question. It's going to be a black t-shirt with our logo.
Nice.
There's going to be an illustration of JR and I in action, and it's just going to be just a gift to say thank you for listening to our show.
It's high quality t-shirt. You're going to want to wear it. You'd want to wear it even if it didn't have this awesome illustration on it.
I'm going to be wearing it, you know, so are you going to wear it?
I'm going to wear it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
I'm wearing it.
So it's going to be the, at Facebook, just go to Unsolicited Advice Podcast and that'll be us there. Go ahead and become a fan. So we'll do a few different ways. Either like a post on there if you're new, or become a, you know what? Let's make it simple. New people, like something, share it. First three people get a t-shirt.
Okay.
Bam. I'll contact you for your shipping information.
Okay.
Simple enough?
That's simple.
Okay. So how do you get a t-shirt?
The way you get a t-shirt is you like us and you share it on your Facebook.
Absolutely.
And you have to be one of the first three to do that.
Absolutely. Done. Back to the topic today.
All right.
So the reason this came up is this topic came up. The tone got really somber very quickly. Super excitement, yeah, t-shirts, right. And then... All right, so...
Let's bring it down.
What's going on lately?
Yeah. Death. That's what's happening.
There's been, yeah. So what brought this on was I was reading... I would have different people I know on... Mainly, I mean, I know them personally, so... I'm friends with them on Facebook, and they post articles about police violence, either one way or the other. Either these are police officers posting things, or people who have a different, less progressive view about what's going on, I would say. And the one article that set this off was a story about a series of a group of black men who were accused of... There was some sort of violent act committed, and the person had posted something along the lines of, well, why isn't there riots over the streets of what's happening when a group of black people assault another person? Why isn't there riots?
Mm-hmm.
And why isn't there protesting over this kind of stuff?
Right.
And so, okay, I understand.
Well, it's yeah, okay.
I understand the question. And then I was reading... And then there's also the other side where people are posting about
how... like a seven-year-old, I understand the question. It's logically flawed. I mean, one group of people is, not in a power position, right? If you're like, and the other people are afforded all this power. And when somebody abuses the power, you have to try to protest it to try to change something. But somebody that's...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. It seems pretty clear.
No, I agree with you.
Yeah, sorry.
The other side was I know it's good to clarify these things. So the other side was just the individuals who were just outraged at these children getting killed from less affluent African American neighborhoods, right? And they were against police brutality. So I was thinking about, and so I understand there's two sides to every story, and I'm not an expert on necessarily the in-depth social issues that are causing these things and the political. I mean, I'm not going to claim to be. I can see the two arguments and all the arguments in between.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was thinking, people basically have two choices, okay, in every argument. They can choose to be outraged, or they can choose to be outraged about the outrage. Those are the two choices I'm finding people have to be. But somebody always has to be outraged about something.
Mm-hmm.
You're either outraged at what's happening or outraged at the responses. So there's really, those are your two options, it seems, in sort of this little box that we have to put ourselves in.
That's interesting.
And so I had posted a comment, because I was, so back to the story about this group of gentlemen. I wish I could, I'm actually looking for the story as we're talking, but the story about these black men who had assaulted or committed some violent act, and they were part of a gang from part of the article that I read. And my reaction to that was, well, I was wondering, because everybody was like, we need to get these scumbags off the streets, and we need to get these people, like, what's wrong with these people, and things like that. And so my question was, and I said, well, I wonder why their gangs exist in the first place. What's the social benefit for them having gangs? What's the function of a gang? What's the function of, you know, why does violence occur within poor neighborhoods among certain? And I don't even have the stats to tell you that there's more violence among certain races, because I don't even want to make that call, because I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And the immediate response back to that was, are you justifying this actions being okay by saying that? And I was like, you know what? This is not a venue for a conversation.
Right.
There's no avenue for a productive conversation that will lead to even an inkling of progress or change in this sort of race relations / understanding of groups of people doing certain things and other groups responding a certain way. And so I got to thinking, I was like, the issue is not, if you take one side again for the police, right, and I'm being black or white, and I take the other side for the rights of African Americans, okay, mm-hmm. As long as we have that sort of that banter back and forth, it's like the Democrats and Republicans in politics.
Right.
My side, your side, there's no room for what I would consider to be like a process work,
mm-hmm.
where it would be like, well, let's really talk about what are you actually trying to say right now?
Mm-hmm.
What are you, maybe there's something that you're scared of as the person who is all for the police. What are you scared of? What are you really trying to say when you're defending yourself? And when I'm defending myself or protecting myself or being angry, what am I really trying to say? So that's the first part. And the second part is really, how do we change the way we're debating about these things to a more inquisitive way of asking, why is this even an issue in the first place? Why is it that these things happen in African American communities? And why is it that that police all of a sudden seem to have a certain power, an unchecked power, in certain cities around the world too? And it's been well documented about, you know, police corruption all over the place. In fact, the Cleveland Police Department is now being investigated by the Justice Department for abusing their power.
Do you think it's all of a sudden that this is like spiking up, that police have more power than they used to, or do you think that it's just being exposed more or talked about more?
Maybe a little bit of both. What do you think?
I think it's talked about more, probably. I think it's always been talked about, like police corruption, how much power the police have. I think that they probably have less than they used to, with all the checks and balances that we have now that we didn't used to have before. The fact that we have cameras on our, you know, we can be filming them easily, or and they get caught, you know, with people filming them, bystanders filming them, or you know, that they have some police officers have cameras on their bodies that they have to record everything that they do, you know, and if they're accountable to that, then and they can get caught easier, they don't act up as much. It's when no one's looking, you know what I mean? And
somebody's always looking now.
Somebody's always looking now, yeah. I think it keeps them in check a little bit more. And it probably seems like more of an issue because we're talking about it more, but really I think that's just things correcting themselves. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
I think that both groups are put in awkward positions in the first place. I think African American community and those in poor neighborhoods, less resource neighborhoods, they're put in a position where they feel like they're being picked on. Probably they are. Mm-hmm. They're put in a position to not succeed in the first place. Do you know what I mean? And police officers, on the other hand, they have no choice but to go into these certain neighborhoods where they're looked at as the bad guys. Yeah. They do have to protect themselves at the same time, but they also have a public service to do. You know, and I think that, and going back to this, and I'm really deviating off this now, but I was thinking about how racism starts in the first place. Mm-hmm. Okay. And the other thing is, you can't even call, if you start a conversation by calling somebody a racist, the conversation is over at that point in time.
Right.
You can't do that. So that's another part back to the part.
Because the other person loses all credibility if they're racist.
You just become defensive immediately when somebody has something about your character. If I say, JR, if I really want to have a good podcast and I say, JR, you kind of suck at speaking over a microphone. Mm-hmm. What's your first reaction going to be if I was sincere about that?
Yeah, I'd be like, well, fuck you, man.
exactly, you know. So I sort of got sidetracked here, but I was thinking about, you know, where these things start off with. And,
yeah, you're saying, where's racism
start? I remember as being a child, a small kid, and I had no choice over this. I was exposed to this at a young age. I would sit, and I love my grandpa to death, right? He's one of the best things in my world, always has been. Mm-hmm. But I do remember sitting there and listening to him talk about black people in a very derogatory way. Mm-hmm. About how blacks do this and blacks do this and this and this. And I'm young and I'm like a sponge. I'm sucking these things up. You know what I mean? So at a young age, it sort of gets stuck into you. And it wasn't until... you should be afraid of black people. They're violent and they're going to steal and rob from you, right? Mm-hmm. Very generalized type of things. And it's awful. It's not really until you get older where you get more exposure in life and you actually, you know, you get to be around people that are different than you, then you have to sort of start breaking down these stereotypes and a lot of these prejudices. But I think for police officers, especially an all-white police officer, why would it be any different? I mean, I would say I'm a demographic that probably is just as much as a lot of all-white police forces out there. We grew up with the same thing with media messages about what it meant to be African American, mm-hmm. with movies. You know, I think as you get into the idea of institutional racism at a certain point in time when you start having this discussion, mm-hmm. and so these cops are out there, and whether they want to be nice or not, they're really working off the way all the information they absorb when they are younger, and they can try to break it down. Mm-hmm. And all it takes is one bad incident, one negative occurrence, right, for them to make that sort of attribution error. Whereas I had a bad interaction, as hard as I'm trying to be a good cop, I had a bad interaction with an African American, and now all of a sudden you're set back. Like even like John Gottman, when in relationships, so you need to have like five positives for every one negative. Mm-hmm. Probably the same thing exists, I would say, amongst the spectrum of human relations. Mm-hmm. You know, so it doesn't take that much, and the high stress of the job, things like that, it's a difficult position to be in for everybody. And that's why I really think that, you know, you and I could sit down and have a conversation, but we really need to get at the cause of why are our black communities so poor? Why and how are the laws set up to make or succeed? How are the laws set up to facilitate growth in those communities without sort of this institutionalized racism type of treatment of them?
It's $1 million question, man. Or the answer would be the million.
But how do we create a dialogue that actually gets away from the old Facebook style of, listen, I'm going to get all my news from Fox News. You're going to get all your news from whatever, the Huffington Post. And so we're going to go keep going back to news sources that that or talking to our friends that just have the same views as us, and we're never going to take a chance to look at the other side of the story.
Mm-hmm.
How do we set up that dialogue? Because it's not going to happen. It's not happening.
Yeah.
And I feel like we have made very little progress as far as the... I think we've been able to cover it up very much, but I don't think racism is... And I'm saying it goes both ways, black to white to black. There's no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we can't put all white cops, white police officers in the same category mm-hmm. as being bad. We can't even... I don't think that anybody's acting bad. I think people are, unfortunately, conditioned to act the way that they are. But how do we open up this dialogue of curiosity and education about why gangs exist, why there's more violence in certain communities, why there's more drugs, why there's more this and that, and how do we get away from categorizing things as good or bad necessarily too?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that there's value to characterizing things as good or bad, but what is good or what is bad, I think that that's the definition that you want to look at. Like, you know, how's it contributing to society, or how's it contributing to things getting better? If it's contributing, that's good. That's a good thing. I don't know. In my mind, that has value to it, and it's better
right.
than everybody just arguing and doing the same circular, you know, argument. It's a good question. You know, I'm just after you lay all that out like that, I'm kind of at a loss. But I think it's helpful. It would be nice. See, there's a financial motivation to sensationalizing stories and focusing on the parts that excite people emotionally and get them out of their more rational mind and into their, you know, have them all in a huff and a puff about what's going on. You know, that's more...
Well, you can't make decisions in highly emotional aroused states. Like, we know you that. Can. And everybody's constantly in this. You see a story, you see a video, your mood, your emotions are heightened, you respond.
Yeah.
There's no way to have a constructive talk like that.
There's not. So, but that's how, that's a lot of times, like, it's entertainment news, you know, like these 24-hour news cycle channels, they're not just trying to inform you about what's going on in the world, they're trying to entertain you and sell advertising,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that people will still watch, and if they sensationalize a story, it's going to be more interesting and entertaining, and you see, I was just watching, like, local news channels the other day, and I watched a couple like short news, like little broadcasts, like what do you call them, like segments, right? Yeah. A story about this one lady who was getting care for her. No, she got her identity stolen, her personal protected health information stolen, and somebody started using her insurance to have a baby. So this lady's identity got stolen. This other lady had a baby under her identity.
That's crazy.
And then the Child Protective Services was contacting the lady whose identity was stolen because the baby was born with drugs in its system.
Oh.
And she's like, well, I don't even have a baby. Like, come and look at my house. I have children, but they're like 8 years old.
Yeah.
And there's this whole thing. And just the way the newscaster that was talking about the story was talking about it, she stepped everything up.
Yeah.
You know, the lady was talking about her experience was like, oh, I had to contact them and tell them it wasn't me and this and that. And it sounded like when the lady was talking about it, it was getting worked out. But then when the newscaster talked about it, she's like, the people were making her life a living hell. Like,
oh, yeah.
And just like really amping it up. It's like, it was strange. And I've noticed a few other places, that was a really long explanation for that point.
The point you're trying to make, though, is that they're simply... The facts aren't always the facts as presented to us.
Right.
And unfortunately, we all have we think we have choices as far as where we get our information from, but in fact, it's very, really is very limited, unless you really go looking for it.
Yeah. I mean, that would be one way to portray, so how do you do it? I mean, it's really idealistic, and I don't know how much hope I have for things to change, but one way is I would start with, like, the news and people's understanding of the news, and not try to portray entertainment as news, and understand the difference between reporting
mm-hmm.
and editorializing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the two are blurred these days, where everybody's opinion, the news people's opinion is right there side by side with the actual content, the reporting of the information. And it's not, and both sides aren't shown side by side or whatever, you know, it's incomplete, and that's what people are reacting to, You know what I mean? I mean, they're reacting to the information they're given, and the conversation that people are having is the conversation. It's not the meta conversation. It's not the conversation about how can we actually change this.
Yeah.
You know, it's, well, I guess it is, but it's all finger pointing and it's not collaborative.
It's content driven as opposed to process driven.
And it's divisive, like you're saying. You know what I mean? Like, we talked about it a little bit.
Well, you're trying to bring shame on the other side, essentially.
Yeah.
You're trying to bring shame to the other side, and that hasn't really been effective.
It's never effective because, like you said, the other side gets defensive. And if it's all divisive and it's us versus them, a lot of times it's all the other side that needs to change.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then you're all good. If you would just change, it'd all be better.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it's not a conversation of what's my role in this? What can I do in my life today to try to make this different? Or, you know, whatever it is. I mean, that's such a huge question. And we have so much history in our country. Like, I don't know if we'll ever grow out of the tensions between the races in our country. Like, I don't know if that'll ever happen.
You don't think generationally that eventually we'll have to dissipate or at least change in some way?
It's been kind of, I don't know, man, it's been a while since slavery ended, and we still have, I mean, we have a lot of bad blood about things. I mean, we haven't grown out of our history. It's part of our narrative. It's part of the story. As you're growing up, you're part of the group where this happened to them. And that's still, you know, it's not like that society has dwindled away and there's this new society and that's not part of the history. That was, you know, it's like you're still part of that society.
We still have our older generations who, I'm not saying are bad. I'm just saying that we still have generations that are three or four generations ago alive. And if you look in, you know, sort of higher politics, it's mostly all Caucasian men in their 60s and 70s and even their 80s.
Right.
Who are still driving policy in the country. So I want to back up, though, to your point just want to make one quick point. We were talking about media consumption, and one thing that's different now is that the sources of media are everywhere. There's an infinite number of options for you. Some of them are much more in your face than other ones are.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like you're suggesting that there is part of educational curriculum include how to consume news media in a critical thinking manner. How do you? It's just like. It's
societally.
Like, well, you and I used to have to read, like, I remember in English classes, like, we used to have to read poetry. You know, we have to go back through the poetry and decide what did each one of these lines actually mean? Mm-hmm. Where was the author coming from? What was his background? It's almost the same thing, except now you're going to look into news stories and we're going to say, hey, let's decipher the story. Let's look at, you know, what's the bias of this author or this company? Like, how do we teach people how to do that across the spectrum.
Yeah, I don't know.
Man. I mean, it's just.
I mean, like, one way, in my mind, one way to do it, since we're thinking on such grand levels, like, I would love it if we had just a value in our society that, like the same way we kind of, value in our society, we didn't value, we looked at these, like, what CNN has become and what Fox News is as junk food. Kind of TV and lower brow news, you know, this isn't the real stuff. This is kind of what, you know, you watch when you're, you know, I don't know. Like if when people look down on things like that, there should be shame in watching that stuff, I think.
Yeah.
And that would be helpful. You know, it'd be good if,
it's not like we have a choice though. I mean, a lot of us don't really have choices, but to watch that, it doesn't seem like a choice. It's like,
I don't even watch, I'll be honest with you, man. I don't watch the news. Like, at all. Like, I ingest very little news about the world. And I feel irresponsible about it sometimes and out of touch and kind of, like, silly or, like, it's juvenile or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe I'm putting my head in the sand or something like that. But a lot of it is, first of all, am I getting the real story? Has it, like, or is it somebody's version of the story or some, like, manipulation, you know, like...
Well, there's always two sides to every story.
Well, there's always two sides to every story, but also, why am I watching this story? Like, I'll give you an example. My bottom line right here before I launch into this is I don't trust the news, okay? So, last Christmas, and anybody at home listening can look this up. It's on YouTube. I think Conan O'Brien did it, maybe, or something like that. It's called It's All Right, You Can Admit It. If you put that into YouTube, then you'll probably find this video. And what it is a long stream of newscasters in different local stations saying the exact same story, as if they'd written it or whatever. Now, and it's about 5 minutes of one newscaster after another saying, it's okay, you can admit it. If you've bought 1, 2, or 10 gifts for yourself this holiday season, are you going
to
play it?
Yeah, I think I'm going to play a little bit of it.
Can we listen to it on the thing?
Yeah, I'll just put the mic up. Oh, is that perfect. It right there? And newscast your great Christmas present or 2 or 10 edition?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, we're going to play a couple little snippets of this.
Yeah, here we go.
I'll fast forward a little bit to the segment. Okay, so can you just tell us what we're about to listen to again? Just sort of recap this.
This is Conan O'Brien. It's a great little skit he put together. Won't work.
No, go ahead. We'll still make it happen.
Okay, Conan O'Brien put together this sketch where it's video recordings from newscasters in different local markets throughout the country saying the exact same thing over and over again. And what it exposes is that certain stories are just distributed. Somebody is putting together certain stories for some reason and distributing to those markets, and that's what you're ingesting. It's decided by, in some cases, it seems to be decided by some central, you know, somebody is producing this and distributing it out to everybody for you to hear. Okay. Now,
you want to see if we can get a little bit of this in here?
Yeah, I'm worried about it. Okay, so that didn't work out. We tried to play the video, but there's too much feedback. So, like I described...
I'll post it on the Facebook page.
We'll post it on the Facebook page so you can watch it on there. But it's hilarious, and it's a little disturbing because everybody keeps repeating the same line over and over again. And it seems to have, like, this materialistic kind of edge to it. They're trying to encourage people to go out and spend money on themselves in the holiday season. Don't just buy gifts for your loved ones. Buy gifts for yourself, too. Hey, this is a good time to take advantage of all those deals and get some gifts for yourself.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it seemed like if you watch it on one station, that little story would have just seemed like, oh, how interesting, and oh, they reported that for us. That's cool and whatever, but when you see it across so many stations, you start to think like, oh, are they trying to manipulate like the masses in some way? Trying to drum up a little extra business? And who's who are the people behind the scenes pulling the strings? And I don't want to sound all conspiratorial and everything, but this is pretty understood stuff that the media, I mean, news stations don't really give you, you know, the good stuff.
I don't think there's anything wrong with your opinion. In fact, you said, you know, people will be like, oh, maybe their response was JR, this sounds like a conspiracy.
Yeah.
It's as much of a conspiracy as JR and I conspired to come together today to make this podcast, didn't we?
Right.
We both got together. We came together. I said, JR, I want you to come over here. I'm going to meet you at this location.
Right.
We are going to make a podcast. That is essentially a conspiracy to record a podcast.
I guess so.
So if you reframe a conspiracy, well, there's something... it's really saying that two people got together, or two groups, and said we need to drum up some more business.
I've heard that before. The difference is the conspiracy is kind of like nefarious, and it's done like with behind, like behind people's backs and everything like that. And I don't want to suggest something that sounds so far-reaching, but it's pretty well established that owners of media corporations will put out stories that are in their interest to be out there. It's been happening since forever, probably, but since they've had media, probably. But the Hearst, William Randolph Hearst, was famous for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's been happening ever since, man. So I don't trust news organizations. And I forgot exactly where we started with this conversation because of the whole feedback.
Oh, we were talking about the police, about the news people are getting about the Ferguson trial and the the gentleman in New York and Cleveland.
So, you know, I might be the wrong person to talk to about this because I'm the person that tends to believe that highly emotionally provocative issues are pushed out on people. So that we get all in a hiff and start arguing with each other about things so that shady stuff can really go by without us really recognizing.
Right.
Like, I mean, this argument that we're having has significance and is important. There's really important pieces to it. Right. But like you're saying, we're not having the argument that actually makes a difference. We're having the argument that gets us nowhere. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the argument that's being had in the media. It's not, and people in media are smart people. We're not that smart, okay? I mean, like, we're of average intelligence over here, so it's not like we are the only ones that can see this. This is something that gets talked about all the time, you know? Like, we're not having the conversation we're supposed to have. It's, when something's so emotionally provocative, it's easy to derail the constructive, logical conversation.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, you can't fix a problem unless you understand why it's happening in the first place. And the thing that I hear, and this is what I hear a lot of times, and I could be wrong, but if you're saying that, if you think, and this is one side of the argument, again, I'm not going to go against sort of my own viewpoint. I'm acknowledging this is one point, but what I have heard so far is that when you blame the black community or these kids for getting murdered or killed by the police or shot, and you say, well, they should have done what the cops told them to do, right? So essentially, where is your why is coming from? There must be something wrong with that person for getting shot.
Blaming the victim.
You're blaming the victim for getting killed by a police officer, okay? And so, and then people will make more generalized comments of why do they do that? Why they? So once you start getting into theys, then you really start making it a character defect of a whole group of people that share in common.
Right.
You're not putting there's no responsibility for the other side. There's no responsibility for the culture that we live in, the society, the government, anything like that.
And these are things that happened that we know very little about. You know what I mean? Even the people that were there disagree on on what happened. You know what I mean? So it's. That's the other thing that's crazy about this is that we're having these huge arguments about things that we don't even know what happened. It's it's wild. It's wild. And things do need to change. Whew, man, social change is a big thing. Changing things like this, and this is like I said before.
It's takes changing. Generations,
it's
though.
Changing. I think that there's always going to be a racial edge in our. In our society, as long as the United States is the United States and it has the history that we have, there's always going to be some form of tension and some discussion going on and some question whether that came from that, you know, racially oppressive place or not, you know.
Yeah, I hope there's some corner of the world, and I guess maybe there's more conversations like this happening in other places, and I think that's the way it has to start.
Well, what do you mean other places?
I mean, just some other corner of the country or the city or the state that there's somebody else having this exact similar conversation, and maybe two opposing sides or relatively opposing sides are having able to even have the conversation about the way they need to be approaching this thing.
I hope we get farther and farther away from it.
Because I don't know what good demonstrating does anymore. I'm confused about that, the effectiveness of it even is.
I was just talking about that with a lady I work with the other day. She was saying something really similar. She's like, I'm all for, you know, exercising your rights and social justice and all this and that, but you know, what's actually being accomplished? What's happening?
Because in my mind, we're going to demonstrate, and then, you know, it's slowly going to fade away, and it'll be a distant memory in a matter of 6 or 8 or 12 months. And so what has changed from this outrage? You know, it's demonstrating is important when it's organized and consistent and it has a political agenda behind it, a plan of action, not just a, I respect it, but not just a temper tantrum.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? There needs to be, again, because demonstrating is just the same as we're talking about. It's just the one side, right? They're not looking at sort of the process of what's been taking place. And
a lot of really smart people. There was the Occupy Wall Street movement.
That was a good one.
That was a good one. Well, here's the problem with, and a lot of people were pointing this out during this movement, and I'm sure that movement had lots of problems and whatever, but so anytime like a movement will pop up, like something with some group with a lot of power or something, like historically they've had like a leader or, you know, a face to that, you know, or some guiding principles or mm-hmm. something. And the story goes that the quote-unquote powers that be will attack those values or that, you know, that that leader.
Smear their campaign somehow.
To discredit the organization as a whole, and that's how...
Yeah, and I think that's generally, everybody understands that happens, I would think, by I now.
Okay, so that's not too crazy. So then... so then What a lot of people in the Occupy movement tried to do was anticipate that and, you know, try to get around it by not putting up a leader mm-hmm. and stating that there will be no leaders, you know.
Which was anonymous, I think.
And that there were no, you know, agreed upon, like, rules or principles or anything like that. But so then there was no real movement because it was just people...
There was a movement.
Yeah,
I remember. I've read stories about how, if you remember that movement, they started coming out stories about how there was rapes and violent acts within these camps and drugs being sold and bought.
Mm-hmm.
And what I remember and understand of this was these were sort of undercover CIA FBI people who were in charge of trying to slowly discredit this organization so they stopped getting coverage by the media.
Right.
And the media, the coverage they started getting wasn't about the movement, but was about the rape, the murder, the drugs.
Right. Or, like, when they had a protest, you know, there was all the stories about, like, the guys with the military boots throwing bricks through windows. Mm-hmm. Like, the only people that were acting violently were the, you know, agents that were planted in the thing. And I wouldn't be surprised if that happened, you know. And the other thing that happened is that
documented, things like that have been proven to have been the case in history. So it wouldn't be absurd to.
Yeah, I go along with that. I believe that it happened, and you know, and then it got cold, and people, you know, and the other thing that happened was no one was at that point. There were a lot of people that weren't suffering that much. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, there were, at a certain point in the United States, like, if things got bad enough, people would really be protesting to a point and be forcing people out of office and things like that, like mm-hmm. you've seen in other countries, you know?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Like a revolt, basically, is what you would call it. But
hasn't got to that point yet.
You have to be... population has to be uncomfortable to a certain point.
Yeah.
Like, things really have to be going wrong. Like, you know, you're not getting water anymore. You can't keep the electricity on or, you know, something.
Unemployment is 50%
or right.
something crazy like that.
Something wild. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting conversation. I think that could, you know, I hope the conversation is happening elsewhere as well. So, you know, my solicited advice is when you start reading your friends or your coworkers or going on to the news and reading an article that brings up some emotional reaction to you, I want you to take a step back, right? Question it. Wonder why that story might have happened. What was the story behind the people involved in those stories? And then step backwards a little bit from some his family, where did he come from, to his community, to his culture, to his race, and start sort of wondering, what was the actual, all the events prior to this that might have led up to this content or this one occurrence that's now being covered, you know, right?
Mm-hmm.
So imagine if this entire event was covered from, like, a movie from the beginning. And this would be, like, the climax of the movie now,
mm-hmm.
right? And it would probably end up being a tragedy. But what was the story behind it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just be curious about that. And try not to buy into sort of following the popular opinion of those around you and maybe questioning the validity of their opinion as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That would be my advice this week.
All right. Okay. I like that.
Okay.
That's good.
All right.
I think my advice on that would be, while you're looking at that, look at yourself. Most of all, why you're getting so upset, and whether it's worth getting that upset about, and how much, what you can do if you're that upset about it.
What are you going to contribute?
What are you going to contribute, or you know, how much? Yeah, how much is it worth it to you? And do you really want to read stuff like that? If you decide that you don't have a lot of power in this situation, outside of you know being a good person yourself. Do you want to read those articles? I don't know. My unsolicited advice is don't watch the news, I guess.
There we go.
Basically.
Problem solved.
Problem solved.
That's it for today, I think.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
That was fun.
Yeah, it was good. It was a good talk. I'm going to post that video of JR was talking about the contradictory news stories. I think
it goes from like kind of funny because they keep saying it and saying it. Then it goes to like kind of strange. Because it keeps going and going. It goes on so long that you forget you're watching the video, and then you realize it again.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's disturbing.
So, also, don't forget to like us on Facebook, and and we'll send out the first three new fans of our page a t-shirt.
Nice.
And I'll contact you for the address.
Yeah,
bonus.
Don't sleep on that. They're going to go quick.
They are going to go quickly. Anyway, thanks for listening. We'll see you guys next time.
Thanks, guys.